I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. Rob Lowe has a long list of film and television credits to his name, and he can also add best-selling author to that list. In his new book, Love Life, he shares stories and observations about his life as a Hollywood actor and as a father, husband, friend, and one-time Playboy Mansion hot tubber. Is that even a
That's
term?
A thing.
That's a thing.
It's a technical term.
It's his second book following his bestseller, Stories I Only Tell My Friends, and it's published by Simon & Schuster. I'm very glad it brings Rob Lowe back to the Leonard Lopate Show. Hello, Rob.
Good to be back.
So this is two books now. You've written two books now. And you're not like one of these actors who has somebody as told to.
No.
You sit down and you write these. What is your writing habit like? How do you do it? You're writing memoirs, so you're talking about your life. What do you start with? Do you outline all the anecdotes you want to put in there, or do you have sort of is the theme of this book different from the first book? Tell me what your approach was.
Well, it was different. The first book I had a narrative thread set up because it was about my life. So if I ever got stuck, I knew I had to plow through to get to, you know, the chronological ages I needed to write about. This book was a wide open field, which made it much more exciting for me, actually, and more challenging because I had to figure out what the shape of the book would be.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of premise was I had a number of really sort of much more provocative stories that I didn't put in my first book because I didn't want them to overshadow the rest of the book. I knew it would be the only thing anybody would talk about. So mm-hmm. I saved them for this one. And then the question became, how do you thread them into a bigger narrative? Because it's not just a book about the time I went on a date with Madonna and didn't have sex. That in and of itself, as interesting as it may or may not be, is not enough to be a story in a book. It has to be about something bigger than that.
Now, you're a father. You have two sons?
I do.
And so is that in the back of your mind as you're writing these very provocative stories? Like, oh, this is stuff that my kids are going to read. Or I guess with the internet now, they can find out anything they want to know about you. Your life's kind of an open book.
Yeah, I just assumed the Google search was done, in the eighth grade. You know, so
there were no secrets from them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, tell me what's the most provocative thing in the book. You can start with that and we'll work from there.
Well, that's hard to say. It depends on what your point of view is. I mean, there are, big deal people in the industry that have been in my life, and so they are threaded through stories. But the average person probably won't care about that. But then there are big glossy names like Warren Beatty and Madonna and folks like that that also have served a purpose for me in my life, where I either learned something or was inspired or disappointed, and I think people really are interested in those stories.
Well, what did you learn from Warren Beatty? I mean, you have a lot in common with him. You're great looking guys. You're known for your matinee idol looks, but also want to be taken seriously as actors. Was there advice that he gave you that was particularly helpful? Was he somebody that you grew up admiring?
He was. I mean, when I was a kid, my guys were Paul Newman, mm-hmm. Warren Beatty.
Paul Newman went to my high school, by the way.
You're kidding.
Yeah, Shaker Heights.
Shaker Heights.
I just had to put that in there.
I love Shaker Heights.
That's where the resemblance ends.
That
completely.
Is awesome. A fellow Buckeye like me.
Exactly.
Paul Newman, Warren Beatty, Robert Redford. Those were the guys that when I went to the movies, I was interested in. Getting to know Warren.
How did you guys get to know each other?
Well, cutting to the chase, he basically just stole my girlfriend. So, that's the story in the book. And it was
that story a little bit.
Well, it was a little like the time I was at the White House and I looked up after a state dinner and saw President Clinton with his arm around my wife, leading her into the darkened corridors of the West Wing. And it was sort of
that's
like,
not good.
And I sort of had like the Warren Beatty thing all over again where I went, well, you know what? I could kind of, I guess if it's going to happen, might as well be. But Warren for me was just representative of the kind of career I wanted to have in many ways, and this story of sparring over a young minx was it's just a fun story.
So what did you learn from that, other than the fact that Warren Beatty does pretty well with women?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's hard, the headline is the headline, and that is, you know, when you're a puppy, you've got to move over and let the big dog eat.
Now, on a slightly more serious note, you've been sober since May 10th, 1990.
Yes.
So that's a long, almost...
Other than the vodka that's in this cup right now. Here at NPR, you guys know how to party.
That's a long stretch. Is it still the same kind of struggle now as it was in the early days, or has it just become sort of braided into your life at this point?
Oh, it's totally in my DNA mm-hmm. at this point. And luckily for me, sort of always was. I mean, you know, the initial going, of course, you're learning to lead and live your life differently. So that was not easy, but it also wasn't excruciatingly hard as I see so many struggle with. And you know, not everybody gets it the first time. And just because you don't get it the first time doesn't mean you're not going to get it. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I was lucky and was able to get it fairly quickly and have, you know, put it together a day at a time since.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What impelled you? Obviously, you're having problems, but what was the moment that impelled you into recovery?
For me, it was sort of a series of events. But I was very close with my grandfather, and he had a big heart attack, and my mother was on my answering. This is the days when we had answering machines, and you'd listen to people calling. And my mom was on the answering machine saying, you know, pick up the phone. Your grandfather's had a heart attack. And I was in no condition mm-hmm. to speak to my mother. And I thought, this is really bad. And
it's getting out of control.
Yeah, this is. And that, so that was it. And, you know, I write in the new book, in Love Life, I write a very, very long chapter about rehab and what rehab is and isn't and what it was to me and for me. And it's, I think, everything rehab is, which is, I think the chapter's really funny. I think it's entertaining and hopefully educational. And that's what rehab was for me.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Rob Lowe about his new book, Love Life, which is published by Simon & Schuster. You talk a lot about being a parent, being a father to two sons in the book. When you were writing this book, were they in your heads like, this is, you know, there's a lot of advice that's dispensed in the book. Were you thinking of them as you were writing it?
Well, I was certainly thinking about them in as I do all the time. You know, they're my life's work and my greatest source of pride. But I think I think most fathers who are present and paying attention to the right things would feel that way. So I don't think that's really special. Because they've informed so much of my life and I love them so much, they're a big part of Love Life. So yeah, I was thinking about them a lot.
It's fun actually to picture you in these very domestic roles because it's not really the first thing that comes to mind yeah. when I think of you, but, You're a coach. You're coaching their teams. What was that experience like being a coach?
Well, I Ty Cobb once said, "It ain't bragging if you done it." So, I did lead the school's sixth grade basketball class to their first and only league championship, and I'm very proud of it. And we handed out our trophies, which incidentally I had to purchase myself and was happy to do it because the school didn't believe in winners and losers.
Which school was this?
Oh, well, I would tell you what school it was at, but not after I just said something like that because it makes them look like idiots. They didn't believe in winners and losers.
Right. Okay.
I very much believe in winners and losers. I don't believe in losers, but I believe in the realities of life.
Wait, if you believe in winners, you implicitly believe in
losers.
That's
very true. No, you're right.
You do.
I like the way you hold me accountable. This is very good.
Someone has to.
Somebody has to, for goodness sakes. So we had our trophy ceremony in a fairly egregious looking Pizza Hut while the Oscars were going on in the television above me. And it was just one of those days where I went, there's one part of my life and there's the other part of my life. And actually, this part, much more fun.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Of course. Now, speaking of winners and losers, you talk about showbiz success and failure in the book. You've had roles in some really great TV shows like Parks and Recreation and West Wing, of course. And you've also had some TV shows that haven't worked out. But you say you don't believe in flops.
I don't.
So why is that?
Because I learned more. I have always learned more, way more from things that didn't work than I do from things that do work.
Mm-hmm.
So the lessons I learned from the shows that didn't work, I hopefully don't repeat again, and use to go forward into the things that do. And I think when I ended up on Parks and Recreation and chose that show, that decision was informed by experiences on some of the other shows that didn't go well. And I walk through in excruciating detail in the book what it's like to be the star and executive producer of a big fancy pants network show that is clearly going into the toilet.
Can you share with us some of those excruciating details? Because it is pretty amazing.
Well, you know, it's the parade of indignities that you
First of all, what was the show for our
Well, there, I do both of them. I do The Lion's Den,
right,
which was my follow-up from The West Wing, which actually was a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of well done that went into the toilet for reasons that are in the book that still make me laugh and cry. and the other was a show called Dr. Vegas. And that's a chapter about how when you think a show can be – it's a show about potential. It's a chapter about potential. I saw potential in a show that nobody else saw. And so we made the show that everybody else wanted to make and not the show I wanted to. And I learned a huge lesson from that. So, and the lesson really is, the old cliche, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Right, right. And when you do someone else's vision and it doesn't work out, then you've kind of failed twice.
True.
Because you didn't even go down fighting. You were sort of like, oh, I'm a whore and I failed.
Well, here's the thing is, I have to say, without sounding self-satisfied, I never really go down the phase of I don't like this doesn't work,
right,
but I'm just gonna hold my nose and do it. But what I was guilty of is, if I do this for the team later on when there's a jump ball that could go either way,
right,
I'm gonna get the benefit of the doubt. How about you never get the benefit of the doubt ever?
Right.
Ever. So you might as well do it your way from the beginning.
Well, and it's kind of a slippery slope, too, because you think, well, giving up this little thing or that little thing won't really change the whole thing.
And before
you know it, you're completely
You sound like you've been in show business.
And have had flops. So there you go.
There you go.
You know, we all have. But right. I wonder, though, like, what is your recovery time like? I mean, everybody fails. But, like, what is your recovery time like after you have something that doesn't work out, and do you sort of dust yourself off and get started up again, or do you go through moments of despair where you're like, I'm never doing this again?
I say in the book, I think it's a direct quote, is you have a flop and you move on. You have a hit and you move on even quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Because momentum is everything, not only in a career, but I think in life.
What was the experience like on West Wing? I mean, one thing I've always wondered about that show is you're reading that Aaron Sorkin dialogue, and you have to really be good technically because you have to hit your marks.
It's a very precision driven. There are all kinds of performances. Sorkin performing is very precision driven, and it's about execution and attention to detail.
Right.
And then making that look effortless.
How did you prepare for that?
I actually think that kind of work, you either have a facility for it or you don't. There were plenty of actors who came in through The West Wing who found it very, very difficult. And then there were others who just took to it like a duck to water. I think you have to have a great facility for memorization, for articulation, the verbal skills. You know, it's old school, almost theatric. It's almost like you have to have spent time on the stage. It's not truly movie or TV acting.
Right.
It's almost theater acting.
Which is a lot harder.
It's more technical.
Yeah.
You know, listen, being organic and real and finding it and being honest is a whole other skill set. And there are plenty of people who are technically great who can't do that either. So, and by the way, this stuff we're talking about is exactly the stuff that's in this book and that I find interesting is breaking, because I like this when I'm reading. I want to know how my favorite musicians crafted their songs.
Right.
And so this is what the book is full of is acting, breaking down acting so people can understand it.
Okay. Now I was teasing the audience by saying that, you know, you spend time in the hot tub in the Playboy Mansion, but that's actually not a very surprising Rob Lowe story. So I'll get into a more surprising story before we close out, which is you had an ancestor in the American Revolution who fought on the British side.
Yeah. First of all, you know, I've always been obsessed with the country and patriotism and the West, you know, the presidency. My house is designed inspired by Mount Vernon. I have a George Washington portrait over my dining room. And my family has no lore. There's no, oh, well, your great-grandfather. And only through genealogy documentary. Whoop.
Now I'm being told after that cliffhanger that I've got to go.
Oh,
so people are going to have to read this in the book.
You have to read it in the book.
But
absolutely.
It's a good read. Yeah. I've been speaking with Rob Lowe about his book, Love Life. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Rob, it's been great speaking with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.